This is episode 13 of the Dear Analyst podcast. Thanks for listening. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about how to sync data between two different Google Sheets that you may have. So in episode 12, I talked about using the import range function in Google Sheets if you want to sync data between two Google Sheets really easily using a simple formula. In this episode, I'm going to go a little more in depth about how you can sync Google Sheets together using Google Apps Script, which is a kind of like a scripting language that allows you to tie together all your different Google apps. So you can tie together Google Sheets, Google Docs, Google Slides, Gmail, Google Calendar, all the Google suite that you come to love and enjoy. So in syncing data between Google Sheets using Google Apps Script, you obviously have to first create a project in Google Apps Script. And I'll post the script in the show notes here. But the script is really simple. It's like 17 lines long. And you just copy and paste it into a project in Google Apps Script. And the whole idea here is that when you, instead of using the import range function that automatically takes data from your source Google Sheet to your target Google Sheet, this will actually periodically update your data, which is kind of similar to import range, but instead it just kind of runs every minute, every 10 minutes, every hour, and it just takes data from your source Google Sheet and puts it into your target Google Sheet. And the only inputs you need for the script are lines 1 through 4. Once you open the script, you need to know the spreadsheet name of the source Google Sheet and the target Google Sheet, and you also need to know the Google Sheet ID of both the source and the target, because Google Sheets needs to know like which data to pull from which spreadsheet, from which Google Sheet, and in the Google Sheet, which spreadsheet to pull from, and also where to put that data into the target sheet. So you have to have both the spreadsheet ID, which is kind of like a unique ID for the entire Google Sheet file, and then you need to know the specific spreadsheet name that you're taking data from and also putting data into. And I'm just taking a look at the script here, and what it basically does is it uses a function called getDataRange, which I remember looking at the kind of docs behind how getDataRange works. But essentially, it looks at data on the spreadsheet and it tries to find data that's like bound by spaces around the data. So if you have data in cells A1 through F20, and there's no blanks, more or less, then it would just basically take all the data from A1 to F20, and then basically puts that data into your target sheet in cell A1 through F20. Now you can obviously be more precise with Google Apps Script in terms of like what data you're pulling from, like what cells you're pulling from, but generally speaking, a lot of people are just trying to take a chunk of data from one Google Sheet and putting it into another one, and the Google Apps Script allows you to do that. Now, why would you use Google Apps Script? One more thing here before I move on. I actually talk about this in the blog post a little bit, but I'll mention some of the advantages and disadvantages of using Google Sheets syncing with Google Apps Script. So one of the biggest advantages I like about using Google Apps Script and syncing Google Sheets data together is that you can use event-driven triggers. And this is really cool because let's say you are in your source Google Sheet and you make a small change to cell A1. That in Google Apps Script, that's considered an event. So the minute that you change some data in the range of data in the source sheet, that will cause the script to run, which then takes the data from your source sheet and puts it into your target sheet. So these simple events are a really quick way to make sure that all your data is updated. So if you are, let's say, an agency and you want to make sure that your clients' Google Sheets are up to date, you can update a sheet on your master Google Sheet. And the minute you make that change, then you'll know automatically that the target sheets for your clients will automatically get updated too. So it's just a nice kind of safety valve to know that things are going to be updated the minute that you, or the second rather, that you update them in your source Google Sheet. And another one, another feature about Google Sheets with Google Apps Script I like is that if you use named ranges in your source Google Sheet, you can insert new columns in the source Google Sheet, and they will also show up in the target spreadsheet. So this means that you don't have to worry about changing the cell references in the script. As long as you have the named range that's expanding or contracting in your source sheet, then that range will automatically get picked up and put into the new Google Sheet, as long as you're using the named range in the Google Apps script. And I think in my current script I mentioned in this blog, in the show notes, like, it doesn't use name ranges, but I did comment out a line 11, which you can uncomment if you want to use a named range instead of just the default, which is get data range function. And you'll see what that means when you look at the script with the comments. Finally, data syncing between Google Sheets using Google Apps Script is pretty fast, just like when you use import range. And next week I'll talk about how you can sync data between two Coda docs, and that process is not as quick as Google Sheets. So if you're looking for kind of more real-time syncing, I think Google Sheets using import range or Google Apps Script is a lot better. Now, there are of course some disadvantages that I've come across with syncing Google Sheets data with Google Apps Script, is that you can't rename the sheet where your data lives in the source spreadsheet or the target spreadsheet, because you are specifying that specific name in the script. I'm sure there's a way around this, but I haven't come across a way to figure it out in my quick research on this topic. But essentially, if you happen to change the spreadsheet name in either the source or the target Google Sheet, then your whole script will break, basically, and nothing will get updated. So that's kind of a bummer. Another thing is that if you delete rows of data in the source spreadsheet, those rows don't automatically get deleted in the target spreadsheet unless you have assigned a named range to your data in the source spreadsheet. So what does this really mean in practice? So let's say you have 100 rows of data in your source spreadsheet, and you decide that like 10 of the rows 90 to 100 are obsolete or something, or they need to be deleted. You delete them. Guess what? They won't be deleted in your target spreadsheet using Google Apps Script unless you do some more customization to the script itself. Now with import range, data will automatically get deleted, which is nice because import range is basically taking a snapshot of the data from your source spreadsheet. But you can't do that with the current implementation of the Google Apps Script that I've provided. Now, of course, if you name the range of data using a named range in your source spreadsheet, then everything will be updated. If you delete data in the source, then it will also be deleted in the target. So that's just something to keep in note, but it's a really small nuance about keeping data synced together, especially when you delete data from your source spreadsheet. As I mentioned before, with the get data range function in Google Sheets, in Google Apps Script, that tries to get data in cell A1, and there can't be any kind of like gaps or missing cells of data in your range, or else the get data range won't pick up that data. So this is one thing to keep in mind if you want to use the current script. And another thing that I don't like about this is more of like a flexibility issue with using Google Sheets and Google Apps Script, which is also prevalent with import range, when I mentioned that last week or the last episode, is that if you insert new columns of data in the source spreadsheet, any custom columns that you've created in the target spreadsheet, like custom formulas or calculations, those will be overwritten by the new columns you inserted in your source spreadsheet. So, you know, let's say you've synced some data over to a target spreadsheet, and in the target spreadsheet, your client or whoever created a column. Let's say you've synced data from columns A through F, and your client in the target spreadsheet has created custom formulas in columns G, H, and I. You know, they're doing some extra counting or some formatting or whatever they're doing, averaging. you decide in your target, your source spreadsheet, you add an additional column. So now your columns go from A through G instead of A through F. Now, when the script syncs your data, the target spreadsheet is going to get column F overwritten by whatever you have in your column F in the source spreadsheet. So any custom formulas gets completely erased, which is not the best experience because most likely that target spreadsheet, those formulas were put there for a reason. And so generally speaking, this is a downfall of, I think, syncing data between Google Sheets with Google Apps Script, such that you can't put custom formulas on the target spreadsheet where you're pulling in data. I would recommend putting your formulas in a separate spreadsheet that's not the sheet that's being targeted for the syncing. Just kind of like a small nuance again about making sure that your data that you or your formulas that you write in your target spreadsheet don't get overwritten by the sync. So in general, I find the Google Apps Script, Google Sheets syncing pretty seamless because you have a script that's like 17 lines long. You need 4 inputs and everything just works. But I think for general users who just want to quickly sync data, I would still recommend using import range only if you're comfortable kind of like editing scripts and understanding a little bit about object-oriented programming. I suppose you could use Google Apps Script for syncing your Google Sheets data, but I still think import range is probably better for most kind of everyday users. And additionally, Google Apps Script, when syncing data on Google Sheets, is kind of just like basically copying data from the source and putting it into the target. So it is a one-way sync. You can't change data in the target spreadsheet, which then gets updated in the source, unless you have another script running the opposite direction, but then you'll have conflicts, which is a whole another discussion that we're not going to get into. But I think in general, like it's just really just copying data from one into the next. So I think if you ever want to create custom formulas and add more columns of data in your target spreadsheet that are not in your source, you have to be very, very careful because data can be easily overwritten, especially these days when businesses have data that's constantly changing and the schema is constantly changing. That's really important to note. So I know I walk through a lot. I think the best advice I'd give is take a look at the blog post and look at the script. The script is probably the easiest thing to look at in terms of getting it set up for your own use case. And just test it out a few times. Again, all you need is the Google Sheet ID for both your source sheet and your target sheet. And then you need the spreadsheet name for your source and your target. And then you're done. And you can see how your data will sync. And of course, there's some settings you have to do on Google Apps Script, but I think it's pretty self-explanatory once you get into the tool. So this is kind of like part two of doing one-way data syncing between different Google Sheets. And next week, or whenever I do episode 14, I'm going to get into syncing data between Coda Docs, which is what I prefer because there's a lot more control you can have over the syncing. Unless, of course, you do custom scripting with Google Apps Script and Google Sheets, which I don't do because I tend to use Coda Docs a lot more these days. So that is it for the Excel Google Sheets portion, I guess you could say. My tips and tricks for syncing data between Google Sheets. Now I'm going to get into some of the podcasts. Actually, today I have 2 podcasts plus 1 article that is Excel related that I wanted to bring up and kind of just comment on and provide you my thoughts. So the first podcast I'm going to give my comments on, and it's one of my perennial favorites. It's the Tim Ferriss Show. I've definitely talked quite a bit about various episodes from the Tim Ferriss Show on Dear Analyst, and this is from episode number 370. And the title of the episode is called Adam Savage on Great Tools, Great Projects, and Great Lessons. And for those of you who don't know Adam Savage, he is like the man. He is most well known, at least in terms of, from my perspective, Mythbusters,
just seeing him like just do stuff with my MythBusters and just trying new things and just seeing if things will work is like, I remember watching that when I was like in college and kind of growing up. Seemed like the dream job to me, just being able to like try stuff and blow things up and see things break, and sometimes things work out the way you want it to. And in this episode, I mean, I would just recommend listening to the whole thing because it's so full of his experiences. And I think he has like a new book out that they talk about in the episode called Every Tool's a Hammer. And he says that the book is a chronicle of my life as a maker. It's an exploration of making and of my own productive obsessions, but it's also a permission slip of sorts from me to you. Permission to grab hold of the things you're interested in that fascinate you and to dive deeper into them to see where they lead you. And I think that just kind of captures the spirit, so to speak, of being a maker, whether you're making with software or making with your hands. And around minute 52 in the episode, Tim actually asks Adam a question, and he prefaces the question by saying that he has always wanted to be a maker, but specifically with his hands, and not in the sense of typing on a keyboard and creating software, but rather making with his hands, like woodworking, metalworking, and working with various materials. And to Adam's benefit, he has worked with all kinds of materials. I'm looking here right now in the show notes of the episode. Metal, paper, glass, plastic, rubber, foam, plaster, pneumatics, hydraulics, animatronics, neon, glass blowing, mold making, injection molding. And Tim was basically saying, how do I do stuff with those materials? How do I make things with my hands? And I think, well, two things I thought about this when he said that was, number one, I consider Tim a maker. I mean, he has made a business. He has made blog posts. He has made books. He has made this podcast. I think the term maker is obviously very, it can be loaded for some people. I think the traditional term that's been popularized is people that make things with their hands that's not like digital. So you're building like, you're woodworking or you're metalworking or you're building something with glass, basically taking physical objects and building something into something else. And I would argue that Tim is a maker in terms of all the things he's done digitally, from the podcast to his blog posts and how much that has changed the lives of people, millions of people around the world, including myself. And I don't think he should discount the fact that he is a maker in his own perspective, but I can see how one would want to be a maker as well with physical objects because it's so much more tangible and there's something very human or I guess tactical with touching something and being able to mold it and control it and saw it and push it down and pull it up. And these are things obviously that you can't do with software. You could if you tie that with maybe IoT or something, but I think in the previous episode I talked about Clive Thompson's coders article about how a lot of programmers and coders love building software because they can quickly scale it to millions of people around the world, and there's not a lot of residue in terms of there's not a lot of, you know, you don't need a whole shop to build your sculpture. You don't need a huge machine to saw 2x4s into the base for a deck. And I think with software, it's like you just need your computer, internet connection, and then you can go on and build amazing tools that people can use. But with being a maker in terms of building physical products, I think that's something that I definitely also aspire to do more of, given that I do most of my work in software and online building digital tools and things like that. But yeah, having the ability to make things with your hands that's not on the keyboard is definitely something I thought would be, I just thought the way that Tim talked about that was very interesting because I consider him a maker, but then I can also see the fact that he does feel the need to build something with his hands. And I think what Adam talks about in reference to his question or answering his question was basically to build a miniature model of your apartment or your house using cardboard. And I'm not going to go off and do that today, but I can see that being a very simple project for somebody to want to build something with their hands. And at least for me personally, like, I find a lot of pleasure in fixing stuff around the house, I suppose. I think this is like maybe getting into home improvement a little bit. But I remember 2-3 years ago when I had gotten ACL surgery on my knee, I was kind of at home for a good month or so and was pretty bored and was trying to find things to do. And one of the projects was I have this LCD TV from 2008. So it's more than 10 years old. Well, at the time, I guess it was 9 years old, but it was super old Samsung LCD TV. It stopped working. It wouldn't turn on. And I wanted to fix it. I was like, obviously I couldn't get it repaired because Samsung is way past like any kind of warranty. And I'm pretty sure Samsung didn't even support that model from 2008. So I was like, you know, forget it. I'm just going to look online, try to find how to fix it. And, you know, after browsing through some random homemade YouTube videos and reading some articles from various forums, I figured out that the problem that my TV had was that it needed a new capacitor, and the capacitor is like these really small kind of, I guess they're like magnetic objects that, and the size of the capacitor I needed was probably the size of a thimble, and you could buy it online for like $5, and you just needed to solder, or you needed to remove the capacitor off of the main chip, or not the main chip, but like the main board where electricity was being fed into the TV, and then you had to solder back that, you had to solder in the new capacitor. Anyways, long story short, I was learning about soldering, I was learning about capacitors, I was learning about TVs, and eventually I was able to fix the TV, and I was, you know, spent probably $15 total on the soldering kit plus the capacitors. And it was such a gratifying experience because I was able to take apart this TV down to like its bare bones and be able to just fix it using basic materials and some help from the internet. And I think from that point on, I was like, man, fixing stuff and doing stuff with your hands is pretty fun. And it doesn't involve staring at a computer screen all day and trying to fix a bug or make data go from one place to another. Sometimes it's fun just to play with electronics and take things apart and solder. So... Anyways, that was a great episode. Definitely give the whole episode a listen, and also listen to the get the book "Every Tool's a Hammer" by Adam Savage. Excuse me, my voice is getting a little parched from talking so much. The next episode is from Product Hunt Radio, and this episode was the one with Danielle Morrill on, and it's on founder loneliness and the power of fiction. And around minute 20, Danielle talks about being a remote worker and how if you are a remote worker, or which I am, it's hard to sometimes to know when to stop working. You don't know that line between personal life and your work life. And I think that's around that minute, 20 minute mark, Danielle was talking about how she would be sitting at her dining table and she wouldn't know when to stop working and start making dinner, which is kind of like the end of work and the beginning of her personal life. Because when you work remotely, you can work anywhere and it's really hard to stop working. And, you know, they talk about in the episode going on and talking and, you know, doing like using Rescue Time, which is an app to keep track of how much time you spend on different apps, and various ways to curtail the time you spend working. And I think this is an interesting concept because it made me think about that BuzzFeed article that came out a couple months ago that caused a huge stir. I think it was early in January. BuzzFeed News released an article called "How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation." And to me, the article spoke to me because it was about how, like, as an adult, there's this one quote in the article where I like, it says, "To adult, quote unquote, is to complete your to-do list, but everything goes on the list and the list never ends." And I think I see that in myself in many ways, but in terms of being a remote worker where you always feel like there's something that needs to be done, I feel that that stress and pressure sometimes from a work perspective, which prevents me from, I guess, finding that line between work and personal life. And maybe it's a function of working for a startup, or maybe it's a function of being a millennial, so to speak. That this episode made me think about that burnout generation article, and how I guess it's important to know where to draw that line, because I'm a big believer that, you know, overworking yourself is not the best, obviously not the best way, but like not good for your health, not good for your mental health, but more importantly is it's probably not great for your productivity. If you're working when you're stressed, or you're just, you need a release, I think being able to draw that line between work and personal is very important. So yeah, this episode was really, really interesting to listen to, just because it spoke to so many things that I am as a remote worker, and it brought about a very important topic of just work and personal life, and how do you balance the two. And you would think that as a remote worker, you make it easier for you to balance, but I think when you are working or co-locating and working in person at an office, you know your day ends when you leave the office and you go back to your home. Obviously, you can still check your email on your phone and stuff like that, but there's this physical separation between home and personal. Whereas with Danielle and for myself, I definitely see that line getting blurred a lot. So definitely take a listen to that episode. Also, that article, the BuzzFeed News article, How Millennials Became the Burnout Generation. It's a super long article, but I would just skim it for a few kind of like tidbits. And it just definitely spoke to me in terms of just how to balance work and personal life, and how to hopefully not have like a never-ending to-do list. That's kind of also a big takeaway, is that we feel like we always have things to do and there's never enough time and we're always busy, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, the very last thing I'm going to comment on, and this is actually not a blog, it's not a podcast, it is a blog post by Eric Coletta, who works at Google on the Google Cloud Platform team, I believe, as a developer advocate. And he wrote a blog post called Why You Shouldn't Use Google Sheets as a Database. And I've talked about this many times in previous episodes on how Google Sheets is not the best data store, especially when you just are trying to throw data into a Google Sheet and it ends up being like tens of thousands of rows. And before you know it, it's super slow and unscalable and you can't scroll through the spreadsheet. And I'm just going to pull out a few highlights that I liked from his blog post, is that he says that first and foremost, Sheets are for people. And I completely agree with that, because Google Sheets and Excel, they're meant to be easily manipulated and viewed. But the minute that you kind of just treat it as like a place to store data, then I think that's, just as Eric mentions in the blog post, you're losing a lot of the benefits of having a real-time collaborative Google Sheet, for instance. And he also goes on to note that, not all Sheets usage is the same. If you just use it for collaboration or for using it for basic input-output, that's what Sheets are meant for. Because again, any user, you don't have to be technical or not, you don't have to be technical or technical. You can just go in, make a change to the formulas, and you see the data being output, and you can now go on with the rest of your day. But when you're using Google Sheets primarily as a way to pull data into another platform for analyzing or for moving data around or for cleaning data up, Google Sheets and Excel is not the best tool. And yeah, I think that he also says that, I mean, I haven't faced this personally, but there is a limit of 5 million cells in Google Sheets, and a lot of businesses that are running, you know, legit businesses that have a lot of data, chances are they are using real databases. And Eric obviously goes on to talk about the various products from Google Cloud Platform you can use. But I think the high level takeaway is knowing when Google Sheets is starting to feel like a database, and the minute that you feel that kind of the minute you feel like you're just drawing from the Google Sheet instead of like using the Google Sheet all the time and like running formulas and doing quick analyses, that's when you should consider putting your data into a regular relational database or another data store that is not Google Sheets. So that was a really great blog post. And he also has a YouTube video from Google Next, which is like Google Cloud Platform's annual conference on various cloud technologies. And it's called How to Grow a Spreadsheet into an Application. And I think this video goes into a lot of depth of like the history of spreadsheets and also how you can turn your spreadsheet into an application. I also link to this in the show notes. Definitely worth the watch. If you need some light weekend watching on how on the history of spreadsheets and applications. It's kind of sad that that's what I consider entertainment, but you know, this is the stuff I nerd out about, and most likely some of you out there are also nerding out about stuff like this along with me. So hopefully you'll find that video interesting. All right. This was a super long episode. I went through a lot, and hopefully some of it made sense. And I think definitely check out the show notes and the blog post for all the scripts, the blog post, the YouTube videos I mentioned in this episode. And in the next episode, I'll do kind of part three again of doing one-way data syncing using CodaDocs. This episode was about syncing data using Google Apps Script and Google Sheets. The previous episode, episode 12, was using import range. And I'm going to cap it off with the CodaDoc one-way data sync, which is, in my opinion, probably the most advanced way to do data syncing, at least from what I've done so far in terms of my personal workflows. But there's a lot more you can do with Google Apps Script than I talk about in this episode and the next episode. So yeah, hopefully you found some of this interesting, and let me know if you have any questions or comments.